2,668 billionaires on its annual list of global private fortunes that run at least 10 digits. In this regard, we have taken a look at the World Media websites for further details. Stay tuned, please. The website of Common Dreams wrote, "Billionaires have become a truly worldwide phenomenon. Forbes this past spring counted up some 2,668 billionaires on its annual list of global private fortunes that run at least 10 digits. And now, the Credit Suisse Research Institute has just published its broader annual census of the world's super rich, an analysis that finds grand mega-million fortunes in nearly every nation. But some nations, the Credit Suisse analysis also shows, host far more of these fortunes than others. And one nation, the United States of America, sits in a wealth class all its own. The United States boasts 39.2% of the world's millionaires. China sits second at 9.9%, with Japan third at 5.4%. The contrast becomes even more striking as we step up even higher into the world of the fabulously wealthy. Some 53% of the global deep pockets worth at least $100 million call the United States of America home. What explains this overwhelming U.S. dominance within the ranks of the world's super rich? The release of another new annual set of stats from the Economic Policy Institute in Washington, D.C. points to one prime piece of answer: corporate executive compensation. The Economic Policy Institute has emerged over recent years as America's most perceptive source of CEO pay data. An analyst from the Institute earlier this week released their latest yearly update. The headline stat from this new EPI analysis says corporate chiefs at the 350 top American firms that trade on the stock market last year realized an average $27.8 million in compensation, an 11.1% increase over their previous year's pay, and a record 399 times more than the take-home of typical American workers. Some context can help here. Back in 1965, top U.S. CEOs averaged just 20 times more than the annual compensation of typical American workers. In 1989, a quarter century later, that gap was still only running 59 to 1. The gap since then has multiplied nearly sevenfold. Overall, U.S. CEO compensation has increased 1,460% since 1978, adjusting for inflation. The pay increase for typical U.S. workers over that same time span, just 18%. Rising corporate executive compensation, note EPI's Josh Bivens and Jory Kondra, has fueled the growth of top 1% and top 0.1% incomes, leaving fewer of the gains of economic growth for ordinary workers and widening the gap between the very high earners and the bottom 90%. This increase in U.S. executives' pay has extended far beyond CEO suits. All top corporate officers have feasted in the fabulous windfall. Amazon, for instance, last year generously shared the wealth well beyond the chief executive level. Amazon CEO Andrew Jassy ended the year up $212.7 million. But Amazon's web services chief Adam Selipsy had no reason to complain either. His compensation for the year, $81.4 million. David Clark, Amazon's worldwide consumer chief, enjoyed a lucrative year as well. His pay totaled $56 million. Amazon's most typical warehouse workers, meanwhile, took home $31,705 last year. The pay gap between U.S. corporate execs and workers gives no sign of shrinking anytime soon. And that shouldn't surprise us. Corporate executives sit on each other's boards of directors. These executives have little incentive to rein in CEO pay in hard economic times and every incentive to insist that only continued high executive pay can keep in place the quality leadership that hard times so dramatically demand. Just how much does all U.S. current corporate executive compensation contribute to the wealth of America's wealthiest? Quite a bit. Between 1978 and 2020, the latest year with comparable stats available, the overall inflation-adjusted annual earnings of nation's top 0.1% jumped 385%. CEO compensation during those same years, EPI notes, grew nearly four times as fast. The bottom line, America's distribution of income and wealth will remain ridiculously top-heavy until people start limiting their rewards, continuing to rush and gush into U.S. corporate executive suits. That limit could come in any one of several different forms. Let's start with taxes. In the two decades after the Second World War, individual income over $200,000 faced a federal income tax rate that annually hovered around 90%. That tax pressure served to deflate executive compensation. Why bother skimming for outrageously high executive pay, after all, when Uncle Sam stood ready to tax away most of any windfall? Another approach to corporate pay reform, limiting the gap between executive and worker compensation, has been a steadily gaining momentum over the past decade. San Francisco and Oregon's Portland now levy higher tax rates on executive pay that runs over 100 times worker pay. At the state level, legislative proposals along the same line are gaining ground. Nationally, as inequality.org details, progressive lawmakers are working to link federal government contracting and subsidies to CEO worker pay differentials. Their goal, denying federal dollars to corporations with wide pay gaps between executives and workers. Corporate America's continuing failure to limit those gaps plays out dramatically in the latest Credit Suisse Research Institute annual comprehensive stats on national mean and median individual wealth. One example, the United States last year averaged just over $579,000 in wealth per adult, almost double France's $322,000 average. But the most typical, the median French adult held a net worth of just under $140,000, almost $50,000 more than the wealth of the most typical U.S. adult. And on the U.S. rampant inequality and discrimination, Global Times wrote, according to the Native American Rights Fund, Native American voters face 11 common barriers to political participation, including limited government services and a lack of funding for elections. Canada shocked the world with the discovery of alarming numbers of children's remains and unmarked Aboriginal burials at the site of boarding school. The incarceration rate of Indigenous Australian people is 15 times higher than that of non-Indigenous Australians, and the death rate in detention is on the rise, causing family separation and seriously undermining the development of Indigenous communities. What's more, the U.S. systematic discrimination and inequality faced by Indigenous people has not been improved by the implementation of post-pandemic economic and social recovery plans. American Indians and Alaska Natives have long had far higher unemployment rates than other ethnic groups, and the gap has widened during the post-pandemic economic recovery period. According to the recent review conclusions of the Committee on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination, Indigenous people's food security and women's rights are not guaranteed, and the willingness and measures of the United States of America to fulfill its commitment to the protection of Indigenous people's rights are seriously insufficient. It is noted that the welfare of Indigenous children in the U.S. is still not effectively protected, and violence and crimes against Indigenous women and girls are still rampant, which greatly hinders the recovery of Indigenous communities from the harm caused by the pandemic.
Join us in this journey. IRIB English Radio.
Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, Consequences of Disorder. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the consequences of disorder in the Islamic lifestyle. We know that Islam is against the disorder, and it orders us in order to have the discipline in our life. Therefore, one of the consequences which we can count is the waste of the investment, the waste of money or the investment in our life. So Islam is against the waste of the investment in the personal life. Therefore, when we look at our life and we look at the Islamic teachings, it says that maybe, for example, we are organizing a party or something like that, an occasion, and there, because of our laziness, because of our not having a proper schedule or time, or maybe we never schedule for something, and we never had the discipline in our life, due to that, if something is wasted, maybe from the food, maybe from the things that we were organizing. Now, this lack of organizing is due to my disorder. So therefore, I need to prevent this. And if I can prevent this, then obviously I can have a good party maybe, or the things that I have organized that can go smoothly. But because of my being lazy or not having a schedule, if anything happens there, obviously this is on my shoulders. The responsibility is with me. Therefore, I need to make sure that the investment is not being wasted in our daily life, inshallah. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the consequences of disorder in the Islamic lifestyle, and we said that Islam gives importance to the discipline and it is against the disorder. One of the consequences is the waste of the investment. Now, when we talk about the investment in before the break, we give some example, but now we want to talk about the investment in the vast area. And when we talk about the investment, generally people think about the money only. But the money is not the investment only. My life, my time, my money, my potentials, every single thing that is in my life is known as investment. If I have the potential of doing something, if I have the skill of performing something in the perfect way, and if I'm not doing that, I am wasting this skill. If I have the time to perform something and if I waste my time maybe in playing games, in watching movie and just wasting my time, not doing it properly on time and at the last minute, if I'm doing that but not doing perfectly the way it should be, then I'm wasting it. And this is not good according to the Islamic lifestyle. In the Islamic teachings, when you are having an Islamic lifestyle, you should be careful about every single aspect of your life. And we must be careful about what we are doing. Therefore, we must have a discipline in our life. We must schedule our daily routine. The time, when I need to wake up, for example, if I can schedule my timings according to the prayer time, for example, waking up early in the morning for the Fajr prayer, for the morning prayer, and then having breakfast, having some sleep maybe for 1 hour, and after that going to the school, coming back. When I come back, I need to pray again, and then I continue doing my homework or anything else that I have to do. So if I can schedule my life according to the prayer time or maybe sleeping on time because I need to wake up early in the morning for the Fajr, for the morning prayer. So if I can schedule my life according to this, then obviously I can become a successful first person in my life, inshallah, according to the Islamic teachings. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Once every 100,000 years, gold is created from the collision of neutron stars. Mysterious gold instantly melted into humanity's desire, contained the magic which enabled civilizations to flourish and fueled the desire that made people venture across oceans. But why do we lust after gold? And does humanity own gold, or does gold own humanity? I'm Daniel Arya, and this is Aperture. For centuries, gold was the economic index which dominated the world before it lost to the dollar. But the 2008 financial meltdown has brought gold back from oblivion. Gold is now dominating the world once again, but why is it gold again? In 2008, gold woke up from its deep, dark sleep. As the dollar became unstable during the U.S. financial crisis, people rushed to gold. And in August of 2011, the twisted destiny recurred. The new gold rush started again. Pursuit has begun once again, and stay with us as we take a look into the history of gold from its glittering past to its sudden return.
Such as gold.
Kingai.
Kingo.
Gold.
Gold.
With gold.
Gold.
El oro.
The oro.
Oro.
Into gold.
Sold gold.
Gold.
Gold price.
Gold mines.
Gold is undervalued.
Currency, which reflects human instincts, is very much alive. Money gained humanity's passionate desire since its creation. Money was at the center of wars and economies. Its origin can be traced back to Mesopotamia. Thousands of years ago, Sumerians were the first ever to develop trade. Since then, many types of currency have appeared in history. Trading goods for goods appeared first. Grains, essential for everyone, were used as currency in many areas. As time passed, smaller objects were used for trading to facilitate easier transportation and exchange. Various metals became the new currency, as they were easily transportable and did not rot. But not all metals were permanently stable. In the end, gold, whose value was accepted consistently as a stable metal, became the best currency. Gold, which is evaluated by its weight and purity, has no exchange rate or nationality. Due to its high value, large trades were made possible with just small amounts of gold. It was the best currency that was accepted everywhere. In 700 BC, the kingdom of Lydia, which ruled Turkey, became the birthplace of the best invention in the history of currency. The capital of the kingdom was Sardis. It was the hub of the East and West, and as trading became important, the need for currency grew. Lydia dominated Asia Minor, It expanded its boundaries as the ancient empire, securing the trade route linking an area of over 2,700 kilometers. Lydia invented the world's first gold coins, using their abundant resources of gold, and built an affluent kingdom.
And this started with King Croesus of Lydia, which is a very famous name, and he really produced the first gold coins and used it particularly to pay soldiers and military people.
In the early 7th century BC, Lydians minted the world's first coins. Gold coins, which feature a lion's head, the symbol of Lydia, became the kingdom's representative export goods. As the world's first gold coins and the world's first empire currency, Lydia's coins spread through Asia Minor and Greece. They became a necessity for trade in the Mediterranean. Goods, art, people, and knowledge gathered in Lydia, and humanity's first retail businesses began. With a single shiny gold coin, people were able to buy horses or delicious food. It also reduced shopping time. A new world had opened up for humanity. But if the Lydians were the first to invent coins, the Greeks were the first to turn coin making into an art form. Each city imprinted its own unique symbols. They were the symbols of national strength. Greek coins circulated the Mediterranean through marine commerce. Gold coins brought revolutionary developments in commerce and became the foundation of civilizations. Education also developed quickly along with the coins. Five 500 years after the birth of gold coins, the currency revolution moved to Rome. Coins featuring the emperor's face, as well as other royalty, were widely used among laymen. As the territory of the Roman Empire expanded, the amount of gold attained through looting and mining grew exponentially. Consequently, the Romans issued more gold coins, and these coins strengthened the empire. Gold coins were what built the Roman Empire. In 395 AD, after the Roman Empire divided into two, Western Rome collapsed within the next 100 years. However, the surviving Eastern Rome continued to write history for another 1,000 years. Constantine the Great moved Rome's capital to Byzantium and founded the Byzantine Empire. Constantine the Great, who reunited Rome, declared freedom from religion and chose Sunday as a day of rest. He also issued a new gold coin called solidus. This is Byzant, the best currency. The Pezat, with a 98% purity, weighed 4.5 grams. The Pezat was the basic currency of the Middle Ages that everyone could trust and use. It was the longest surviving currency in history.
Really ran from about 500, well, really 300 AD, but 500 AD in Istanbul itself, and lasted for almost 1,000 years, really with the weight and the purity of it unchanged. There were some years when it was a problem, but it did last almost for 1,000 years, the Byzantine solidus. It was a thousand year coin, if you like.
The Pezat was the revenue source to maintain a large army and the means of controlling the empire. That is why the Pezat is called the dollar of the Middle Ages. The dollar of the Middle Ages surpasses today's dollar in terms of stability and value. While today's dollar faced a crisis within 100 years, the Pezat survived for 1,000 years. The Pezat was the partner that supported the kingdom for 1,000 years. The value of gold transcends time and space and gives faith to people. But there was a critical weakness even to gold, the best currency. There is a limit to the production of gold, and there are three ways to overcome the limit. One was to endure the lack of currency, and the other was to bring in gold from other regions through trade and loot. The last method was currency degradation, by making more coins with the same amount of gold. People began to deceive others by making new coins using clipped edges of existing coins.
And up until 1696, coins were struck onto a rough blank. So you used to be able to, if you were a very unscrupulous silversmith, you could clip the edges and get free silver. And so there were many laws that were passed to try and stop this. And in 1696, what they did was that they made sure that all the coins were circular with a milled edge. So that stopped the practice of coin clipping.
This is the origin of how the coin edges look today. Clipping of coin edges brought many problems. The value of currency fell, and prices began to inflate. New coins had to be issued to win people's trust. Sir Isaac Newton stepped up to solve all these problems.
And one of his big responsibilities was to prevent forgery. So one of the ways he did that was by making sure that all the coins had a milled edge around them, because if the edge is milled with little grooves, it's impossible to clip off a little bit of the coin.
The grooves on the coins that Newton made are used on today's coins as well. The grooves mark the human greed for gold. Gold, however, was never used as the main currency in the East. As the value of gold developed the currency system in the West, brass coins, backed by the government, played a similar role in the East. Whether it be gold or a brass coin, if the receiver had trust in it, that was enough. People had faith in the government. The first coins in the East were made during the Jin Dynasty. They believed the sky was round and the land was square. So they made a round coin with a square hole in the middle. This shape became the basic shape of Eastern coins for 2,000 years. The trust of currency gave birth to the world's first paper money in China. Gyoza, issued in Buxong in 1023, was the first paper money. When Emperor Kublai Khan of the Yuan Dynasty mass-produced bozhou and circulated them through Eurasia, the era of paper currency began. Paper money was made of paper, but it ceased to be just ordinary paper. Kublai Khan is described as an alchemist in the travels of Marco Polo. Paper currency was like magic to the Westerners who were using gold coins. During the Yuan Dynasty, the government forcefully retained gold, silver, and copper, and with its guarantee, paper money was issued. With the circulation of paper money, less money was spent on producing coins, which led to a better financial status of the government, and thus led to a more active commerce. Replacing the gold with paper money opened up a new golden era in the East. At the end of the 15th century, gold had cast a spell on people and made them cross the oceans, risking their lives. But the lives of Europeans were also shaken up by gold. At the time, the population which had been devastated by the plague was bouncing back. Price of commodities was also increasing. Moreover, as gold and silver from the New World poured into Europe, prices soared uncontrollably. The price revolution of the 16th century began. Treasure from the New World created a large gap between the rich and the poor.
And this is at a time when that is much more than a week's earnings in the late. It's more like 2 weeks' earnings. So it is a lot of time to earn the smallest coin. And therefore ordinary people do not have gold coins. It is something for the rich to have.
Prices quadrupled and sextupled. First, landowners who received a consistent amount of rent went bankrupt. Farmers who didn't have money to rent land became wage laborers. On the other hand, the royal families and noblemen enjoyed an unprecedented extravagance. Gold instantly spread throughout European countries, and in its wake, only collapsed industries and financial crisis remained. Such was the curse of gold. The price revolution continued on for over 100 years without any resolution. It was the longest inflation in history. When commerce expanded and capitalism developed, a barter economy emerged. A system of an exchange of promissory notes for foreign currency began. 48 types of gold coins used in Europe in the 16th century were all exchangeable. Thus, financial innovation was propelled by the power of gold. In the early 19th century, gold faced a new era. Money was dependent upon the value of gold. A system of gold and money exchange emerged. Since then, history repeatedly introduced and discarded the gold standard. In 1819, England pegged the value of pounds to gold and circulated paper money that could be exchanged for gold at any time. By 1870, most countries had adopted the gold standard, and the pound, which could be exchanged for gold, became the key currency around the world.
اقرأ باسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا.
ودعوتك ربي بقرآنك جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسانك. ودعوتك ربي بقرآنك.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطاهرين.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وجل فرجه.
السلام عليكم respected brothers and sisters, and welcome to Let's Recite the Quran Kareem, a series of Quranic sessions held by IRIB English Radio in cooperation with Sevier International Schools Network. Salam alaikum, Hussein Ruhullah, Ali Nasir, and Fawad Haider. How are you?
Fine, sir. How
fine,
are
inshallah?
You?
Yes. Okay, that's great. Ali Nasir, how are
you?
Alhamdulillah,
alhamdulillah.
Alhamdulillah. And Fawad Haider?
Fine.
Okay, thank you so much, brothers and sisters, for joining us today. In this session, again, we have our brothers from Sevier International School. So we are going to, inshallah, hold another Quranic session for you. And in this session, inshallah, we are going to work on the verse number 13 of Surah Al-Baqarah. Ayah 13 of Surah Al-Baqarah, inshallah, we'll work on this surah. Okay, now, brothers here, let's listen to this ayah, inshallah, and then we'll work on the tajweed rules, okay? So, let's listen.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. وَإِذَا قِيلَ لَهُمْ آمِنُوا كَمَا قالوا أنؤمن كما آمن السفهاء ألا إنهم هم السفهاء ولكن لا يعلمون.
الحمد لله, that was a great recitation. Now, before we continue to explain this ayah, let's recite together, okay? And then inshallah we'll explain a little bit about this ayah, then inshallah the tajweed rules. So, ready? Listen and repeat after me, all right?
Yes.
Surah Al-Baqarah, ayah 13, verse 13. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
وإذا قيل لهم آمنوا كما آمن الناس قالوا أنؤمن كما آمن السفهاء
وَإِذَا قِيلَ لَهُمْ آمِنُوا كَمَا آمَنَ النَّاسُ قَالُوا أَنُؤْمِنُ كَمَا آمَنَ السُّفَهَاءُ
أحسن, okay, take a deep breath whenever it's kind of a longer ayah, okay?
أَلَا إِنَّهُمْ هُمُ السُّفَهَاءُ وَلَكِنْ لَا يَعْلَمُونَ ألا إنهم هم السفهاء ولكن لا يعلمون
أحسن ما شاء الله. Last session we talked about the previous verses and the previous sessions, yes? And Allah Almighty was describing and explaining about those people who are non-believers or those who are hypocrites, okay? منافقون. So, or we can say like two-faced people, yes? Like whenever they are with us, there is something, they behave in another way, yes? And when they are like with our enemies or with other people, with non-believers, okay? They act the other ways, like themselves, okay? Like the non-believers. So they are called two-faced people, yes? Or hypocrites. Now, in this ayah as well, Allah Almighty is going to tell you something about the attributes or the qualities of these people. So Allah Almighty says, وَإِذَا قِيلَ لَهُمْ آمِنُوا, and whenever they are told, okay, the hypocrites, the non-believers, that believe like the people who have believed. Can't you see the Prophet? Can't you see the miracle of the Qur'an Kareem? Yes. Can't you see how great lessons the Qur'an Kareem has? Can't you see like thousands of people have died and Allah Almighty talks about their death, that everybody dies and everybody will be resurrected. Everybody's life has been given by Allah Almighty. Everybody is created by Allah Almighty. Can't you see these things, these facts, okay? So believe. Come on, believe like those who have believed. Then what they say? Because they are like, they have kind of inward blindness, okay? Their hearts are sealed when we said, okay? Like, khatam Allah ala qulubi in the previous verses. So what do they say? They say that, shall we believe like the fools? They call the believers as fool people. Okay? They call the believers as fool. That shall we believe like the fools who have believed? And what does Allah Almighty say? Allah Almighty says, look, hey, listen up. Listen up. They are themselves the fools. Allah Almighty says, they are the fools. But they don't know this. They think, fools are like this, okay? That they think they are the only people who have wisdom. Fools are like this, okay? But unfortunately, it's not that case, okay? It's not the case. They are the fools, and they kind of think the people who are not fools, they think that they are fools, but they themselves are fools, yes? You might have seen people like this, that they think like, for example, a fool person, he's walking, like he thinks he's the only person, he has the highest rank, he's the best person in the world, okay? But while other people, those who have wisdom, they know that he is not a good person. He's not in mood yesterday, for example. So one of the attributes of the hypocrites or the two-faced people, the munafiqeen, okay, is this, that they think others are not okay, while they themselves are not okay. Okay? So this is one of the results, the consequences of not believing in Allah Almighty. So we will get an inward blindness. And when we get this inward blindness, our eyes are covered internally, okay? And we cannot see the facts, we cannot see the truth, okay? So this is the result, the consequence of being misled, being in the wrong path, okay? So inshallah Allah Almighty helps us, inshallah, stay on the right path, not in the wrong path, inshallah.
قلب بالحق تعلق وبغارح راء تألق يبكي يسأل خالقه فأتاه الوحي فأشرق اقرأ اقرأ
Let's recite the Quran.
اقرأ بسم ربك الذي خلق.
So now the tajweed rules, the points here that we should mention. Okay, Hussein Rahullah? Yes? Yeah?
So, first point okay. is...
وَإِذَا قِيلَ لَهُمْ first point?
ذَال
The pronunciation of
yes,
the letter ذَال.
Yes, pronunciation of letters.
We must be very careful, okay? إِذَا has the exact meaning that Allah Almighty is going to use that in this ayah, okay? And iza, if we say with za, that's not correct. The meaning of the ayah changes. Even maybe that word doesn't exist in Arabic. Or it exists, but it has just another meaning. So be very much careful to pronounce the letters correctly. Arabic is not a language that if you make mistake, there will be no problem. Okay, Fawad? All right, Fawad?
Yes.
Okay, so you got to be very much careful. So, the pronunciation of the letter, dhal. But before dhal, there is another pronunciation, hamza.
Hamza,
the letter
yes.
hamza. If someone like Fawad sometimes does this, if you like recite it this way, wa'idha qila lahum, idha has another meaning. So that is not the meaning of idha, which means when, whenever. Okay, wa'idha. Fawad, would you recite this? وَإِذَا just these two words.
وَإِذَا
it's correct now. So he does not say وَعِذَا because he has a problem with this letter عَيْن and he like sometimes he's not good with that. So Ali Nasir, how do you say this? These two words.
وَإِذَا
أحسن وَإِذَا okay, make sure it's not too much stretched sound. وَإِذَا no. وَإِذَا two count. Alif mat. Alright? So, وَإِذَا قِيلَ لَهُمْ قِيلَ The letter قَاف, okay, the letter قَاف, which has a kasra. So, it has to be pronounced?
Long.
Lightly.
Lightly.
Not longly.
No.
Lightly, okay?
Yes.
But in reality, originally, this letter قَاف is?
Heavy.
A heavy letter. وَإِذَا, we have to say, وَإِذَا قِيلَ لَهُمْ But it's not correct. So, here, it has a kasra, we learned, okay? And Tajweed rules, we learned this, that whenever the heavy letter has a kasra sound, it will be pronounced as a light letter. Or like a bit, okay, lightly, softly. Not وَإِذَا قِيلَ لَهُمْ وَإِذَا وَإِذَا قِيلَ لَهُمْ All right? وَإِذَا قِيلَ قِيلَ
Yes.
Can you say it, Hussein Rahullah?
وَإِذَا
قِيلَ
وَإِذَا قِيلَ
Oh, no. Just make it more lighter.
وَإِذَا قِيلَ
Ah, that's great. That's great. Good job. Good job. Fawad Haider, can you say this?
وَإِذَا قِيلَ
Ah, that's right. Good job. Ali Nasir?
وَإِذَا قِيلَ
Ah, that's great. But if it's a fatha, وَإِذَا قَالَ قَالَ قِيلَ قَالَ قَالَ is the active form. قِيلَ is the passive form. وَإِذَا قَالَ قَالَ means he says. He said, for example. Qila means he was told. Somebody told him to him. So, okay? Somebody told to him something. So, وَإِذَا قِيلَ Make sure the pronunciation of the letter قَاف. And after قَاف, we have like that long vowel sound. The يَامَدِي وَإِذَا قِيلَ قَالَ قِيلَ The same sound, okay? The same long sound.
Yes, yes.
قَالَ قِيلَ All right?
Yes.
وَإِذَا قِيلَ لَهُمْ لَهُمْ هَا The letter ha is very much important. So, next one. آمِنُ 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 Hamza. And after that, كَمَا Oh, here is the point. We have Alif Mad. After Alif Mad is followed by a?
Hamza.
So, here we have to apply one rule of the Mad letters, okay? So, we have Mad letter, Alif. And we have Hamza, the letter. Yes, Fawad? So we have the Alif Mad, which is the Mad letter, okay?
Yes.
Alif Mad. And also we have what? The Hamza, the letter.
Yes.
So Here we have to apply one of the rules of the mad.
Yes.
So let's see. Is it mad wajib muttasil or jaiz munfasil? Which one?
Wajib muttasil.
Jaiz muttasil.
Mashallah, that's wrong. Completely. I said mashallah because you tried to say something, okay?
50-50.
Yeah. 100% wrong. No 50-50. So, kama amana an-nas. Yes?
Yes.
Okay. So, kama amana an-nas. So, it is jaiz munfasil. You don't need to. It's not wajib to stretch this out. And then qalu anu'minu qalu as well, the same, because hamza and mad are not in the same word, so jaiz munfasil. And kama amana an-nas, the same. Sufaha, this one. If you join this sufaha to the next ayah, again it's wajib muttasil, okay? You can you have to stretch. But if you stop here, like kama amana sufaha, you don't have to stretch. When you stop at a letter that has mad, cut the mad. Make it like a natural mad. Or mad arid li sukun, that one.
Mm-hmm.
All right?
Yes.
Then
yes.
The next one. Ala innahum. Ala the mad. And also we have hamza in two separate words. So, jaiz munfasil. Humus sufaha'u. Again, sufaha here, you stretch the sound for six count. It's wajib muttasil. Because the hamza and the alif mad are in the same word. And the last point here is wala killa ya'lamun. Kin, nun sakin plus lam. Lam from Yarmanun letters.
Yes.
Idgham. Idgham with gunna or without gunna?
Without one.
Do not say walakin la ya'lamun. No. Alright, that's all the tajweed rules in this ayah. So thank you so much. Do you have any question?
No.
So inshallah, in the next session, we will be inshallah working on the next ayah of Surah Al-Baqarah. So stay with us and let's recite the Quran Kareem, a series of Quranic sessions held by IRIB English Radio in cooperation with Sevier International Schools Network. Thank you so much for joining us today. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammadi wa alihi al-tahiri.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad wa ajil farajah.
Let's recite the Quran, a joint production of IRIB English Radio and Sevier International Schools.
وصفاته نبع الهدى نلقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان
IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.